Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and welcome to Fox 11 News In Depth. It's been more than a year, 15 months, actually, since I've hosted this show from our actual studio, thanks to the pandemic. And I'm so glad to be here right now because it's been a couple of months since I've hosted this show at all. It's been just over 10 weeks since this happened. My photographer, Joab Perez, and I were on assignment in Hollywood when out of nowhere, a truck barreled into us and several other people on the sidewalk. Joab and I are recovering, but we just recently got a chance to be reintroduced to two other victims who were there that very same day, hit by the alleged drunk driver that got us, sisters Jennifer Phillips and Gina Lawrence. Here's their story.
Being hit by the vehicle directly and pushed inside of the building, all of my damage is on my left side.
Jennifer had several broken ribs, a broken tailbone, and her left leg was badly crushed.
My leg was flat. There was no structure to it.
The 46-year-old says she must have been in shock because she didn't feel the pain as much as she did the fear that her sister might have been killed. And Gina, her sister, was in a very precarious position.
The truck was on me, and I didn't know where my sister was, and I was really panicky about that. I still have tire marks on my, the back side of me from it.
She says an unidentified Good Samaritan managed to pull her from under the tire by grabbing her clothing.
He just yanked me out, and then right after that, firemen came.
When I came to, when I was under the car, I saw you. And I just remember just feeling just like horror. And I remember wanting to try to help.
But he couldn't. He was too injured. Meanwhile, Jennifer was struggling with a crushed leg and multiple injuries. Both women have had to have multiple surgeries.
She had to go in and have another surgery to fix the she was getting an infection. I think maybe I hit the lottery. I had five surgeries total right off the bat.
Gina spent a few weeks in LA hospitals. Jennifer, 2 months. This after what was supposed to be a fun sister trip.
My recovery is going really well as can be expected. It's going to be a long road. They said, 1 to 2 years it's going to take for me to heal.
1 to 2 years. We cover stories like this all of the time, and usually at the end of it, we say something like, the victims are expected to recover, and leave it at that. But now it's time to take a look at the actual challenges of the recovery that some have to go through, the time, the pain, and the struggle, and also those we have to help us along the way. One of those helpers is Moses Lau. Moses is a physical therapist at the California Rehabilitation Institute, and he was one of my physical therapists at Cal Rehab. And then also joining us is Joab Perez, our photographer, who went through this experience with me. And, we're all in a shared experience that some may never understand. And first of all, Joab, as we sit here and we talk, I'd really like to understand exactly what you're thinking at the moment. And then I'd like to talk about this physical therapy that both you and I are going through right now. Joab.
At the moment, I'm just definitely thinking about getting better. I see you at the studio, and I just feel so happy that you're able to be back where you like to be, doing what you like to do. And I feel the same. That's definitely what I'm thinking is getting back healthy and getting back to doing what I like to do. And on the road of getting healthy, it's definitely doing the therapies. It's definitely going into the therapies, doing the workouts. And that's really what I'm focusing a lot in.
Moses, both Joab and I were at California Rehabilitation Institute at the same time. He was on the third floor. I was on the sixth floor. And you dealt with me. He dealt with other physical therapists there. But the physical part. We're going to break this up into physical, mental, and kind of break this up through the half hour. But the physical part, that is one of the hardest things to try to overcome.
Yeah, it can be. So there's a lot of different things you can take into consideration, just the initial injury, and then also what they're going to be planning for intervention, whether I think for you it was non-operative, or like for Gina and Jennifer, they had to get multiple surgeries. So first is trying to figure out how do we attack it, or what is the intervention from the medical standpoint. Then from the physical therapy, we can address it.
I don't really have a problem talking about my health and my experience with you, Moses, as a physical therapist. What was the first thing you had to deal with when trying to deal with me?
I think it's the first initial shock that a lot of people have to go through of what happened, and then what you have to kind of overcome. So the first thing was you weren't able to put any weight on the injured leg. So first learning what that means first, and then getting you up and pushing you to try to get onto your feet again. And then from there, learning the different techniques. And that's where we come in to teach you how do you move around when the doctor limits how much you can actually put your weight on your legs.
I think what surprised me, and maybe Joab, you have a thought on this as well, is how quickly our bodies sort of collapse a little bit. I mean, my leg, the right leg, which got fractured, it felt like it just sort of got thinner. It got weaker. The muscles atrophied some. That's normal behavior. That's kind of what happened to me. Is that right, Moses?
Yeah, so it's our body is actually really good at using the principle, if you don't use it, you lose it. So when we are injured, we're limited to how much we can move. So our muscles are not actively working as it normally would be. So we tend to go into atrophy where the muscles tend to get weaker over time. And then when we try to pick you back up again, the muscles aren't quite as ready as it was before to handle the amount of work, much less if you can't put both weight on both legs.
Now, for me, it's been lower body. For Joab, it's been upper body. And you've had some of the same experiences, right, Joab?
Absolutely. Talking about not being ready, I remember my first therapy, them taking my arm and just lifting it. And I'm laying down, and they're stretching it back. And, oh, my goodness, just the pain of not having done that for so long. I was having to really just take deep breaths, and they're pulling it further back. And that really was a pain and a shock, but they're saying, hey, we're going to feel some pain throughout this process, but it's going to be good pain. And they've been correct throughout my sessions. I've gotten more motion, and every week is progress.
You know, Moses, I have the same sort of thing with my leg. Very hard for me to bend it all the way back without having some tightness and some pain. But there's that old saying about no pain, no gain, right?
Yeah, so part of it is the body's natural reaction. So something traumatic happened to the body, so it's going to want to guard it at all costs to prevent further injury. So when we try to move it, everyone kind of experiences different types of pain or how severe the pain is. So we kind of work with our patients to figure out how much can I push you to give you as much optimization of movement so then we don't lose that. But also taking into consideration what the patient's feeling. So if it's too much, we back off a little bit, try to ease and just explain that pain is going to be there. There's going to be certain degrees where we're not going to push it beyond what your body can handle. But the movement is going to be, in the long run, going to be better for you than not moving it at all.
All right, Moses Lau, thank you very much. Joab's going to stay with us for a moment. But Moses, I got to tell you, and I want to say it out loud, you helped me get off on, it sounds like a bad pun, you helped me get off on the right foot.
Well, I didn't do too much of the work. Actually, physically, you're doing most. I think all I did was kind of just motivate you, teach you just certain things. And that's what, from a physical therapy standpoint, is we educate patients on how to do things, whether they have to change the way they did it before, but to do it correctly and then build upon that.
All right, Moses, thanks so much. Hello to everybody over at Cal Rehab for me. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we discuss the lingering mental and emotional trauma caused by an accident or injury and what can be done to help, including a surprising new treatment. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and we're back with Fox 11 photographer Joab Perez, and we'd like to welcome Liniani, a psychotherapist who we've talked with before, and she understands a lot of the mental part of all of this, because one of your biggest areas of expertise, Lynn, we should tell everybody, is PTSD. post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, in situations like what Joab and I have been through, it is very possible to end up with PTSD. I think in my case, and I may be fooling myself, but I think in my case, you know, I've covered enough of these stories where, you know, I feel like I probably wouldn't have PTSD. However, I've never been a star of one of these stories before, so it may come by surprise. Lynn, first of all, I want you to address the issue of PTSD and how it applies to traumatic incidents like what happened to us.
Well, it's really interesting that Moses talked about the body's inclination to protect itself physically by allowing the focus and energy to go in places where it's absolutely necessary. In similar form, when you have an emotional trauma, your body does the same process. It tries to protect you, sometimes by dissociating or sometimes by kicking into that fight, flight reflex that comes from the limbic system that allows you to just take action or try to avoid some situation that's really urgent and an emergency, essentially, so that your natural focus then often gets dissociated in the midst of the trauma, which creates a little bit of a consequence later on that's also problematic because you never quite resolve it.
But that whole issue of disassociation, not a very good practice, right? Yeah, you really need to address these things kind of head on. I know in my case, it's been by using social media, by being very transparent, by sharing with the public what's been happening to me throughout the ordeal. I know Joab has done much of the same. And so, one, address the use of social media and trying to deal with the issue of disassociation, but also ask us a couple of questions about our health. We could use a little analysis here, maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
I've got carte blanche. I'm going for it. Okay. But first of all, let me just clarify one piece. The disassociation is something that's completely unconscious. It's not a bad thing. It's a natural, healthy, adaptive thing. So it's just the process doesn't get completed unless you do the kinds of activities and change the narrative the way that you and Joab have been doing subsequently by talking about it, processing the feelings, and moving through the story in a way that allows you to get some resolution, deal with some of the emotionality, and get some, therefore, closure to a situation that got truncated or when you split in the midst of the trauma itself. So I want to ask you both, and whichever one of you wants to be brave enough to go first, are there any residual emotional experiences that either of you are currently having from the trauma that you think may be associated with it?
Joab, why don't you take this?
I know that I was dealing a lot with that maybe about like about two, three weeks ago. I was definitely just feeling very just uncomfortable with the pain. Waking up, I was hurting and just not wanting to have to continually get up with that pain. That was really weighing on me for a while. That has kind of begun to fade. And now as I started doing my workouts, and sometimes when I wake up, I feel a little bit of that. I'm like, man, do I really want to push myself? But, you know, but then I think talking about it with Hal definitely helps out a lot. Talking to my family about it and having them encourage me to, and then, you know, just having things like my daughter and my wife who say, you know what, I got to continue to push myself through that. Those are definitely things that I go through my mind as of recent.
Exactly. See, that's beautiful because you're talking about how you feel. You're recognizing that you have those emotional experiences that are corresponding and you're working through them by talking through them and also by changing the narrative. So you're focusing on something positive that gives you a goal and a way to actually continue to do the physical work you need to create the physical recovery as well as the emotional recovery. It's great.
Oh, I think the most important thing for me, very simply, is this, that I have felt like, how long is this going to go on? You know, how long is this going to go on? I mean, I've done everything I know how to do to be positive, to try to you know, keep the narrative on the high end for me. And it's worked, and it's worked very well. But you keep saying to yourself, how long can this go on? And it's only as long as going to take for your body and your mind to heal properly. Let me let you have the last word, Lynn, on what we need to do. People like us and others who might be out there in the audience who have been in a traumatic incident.
Okay, so there's a couple things. One is the things that you're already mentioning. When you get scared about how long it's going to go on, you talk to somebody about that. You get some reassurance. You move through that emotion. When you feel a sense of loss, like how much time you've missed from work, activities you can't participate in, or the fact that your muscle tone is not as strong as it used to be, all those feelings are just like grieving a former level of functioning. So you work through those feelings the way you did. But if you are stuck, if you are having nightmares, if you're having a startle response, if you're really kind of holding onto a feeling and you don't know how to move it, ideally you would do a form of therapy like what we usually use for PTSD, which is called EMDR, a process where you actually re-experience the trauma, not in a way to re-traumatize yourself, but from a distance, and you're able to complete it, you're able to work through it so that you can tell the rest of the story, which is that both of you are here today and you're fine.
Yeah. Lynn, Yanni, thank you so much. Joab, good to see you again. I'm sure we're going to get together in the next few days. And you know what, everybody? We're fine. We're fine. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, doctors are investigating a new treatment for pain, anxiety, and phobias. And it's something you may have thought of as a toy. We'll show you right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and when I was first hospitalized with my injuries after the crash, I was in considerable pain. I had 6 fractures of my ribs. I had a fracture right below my right knee. Doctors prescribed heavy medication to blunt the suffering, but one of the most surprising prescriptions was actually not a drug. It was something, it looks more like a pair of goggles. Joining us right now to talk about virtual reality pain relief is Tom Norris. Now, Tom is somebody who's a patient advocate, but he's also somebody who's actually been using these goggles to try to get some kind of pain relief. So let's start off with the notion that these things that are often used as toys to be able to sort of, you know, look at really cool scenes and big caves and oceans and dolphins and all kinds of things actually now has medical application. How does that work for you? And what do you think the value of this sort of technology could be in medicine?
First of all, thank you for allowing me to be here. I absolutely love the virtual reality when it comes down to relieving my pain or being a tool to help me relieve my pain. I have chronic pain as opposed to the acute pain that you have. Hopefully you won't get to chronic pain. But the virtual reality allows me to transport myself to another place. It diverts my mind and allows me to regulate my breathing, and it helps me relax.
And I think that's what doctors were trying to explain to me as well, that it takes you out of the hospital for a moment. Now, you're more of an outpatient, so it's not like you're admitted into a hospital for this. You're doing it kind of on an outpatient basis, and you're doing it more for chronic pain. One of the things I understood about the glasses was that it's good for distraction. Is it good for long-term pain care? And you seem to be one who may have an answer to that.
Well, you know, I think it has not been proven yet, but it's being worked on. It's been, use of virtual reality has been proven to be effective for acute pain. I have used it for my PTSD breakdown recently. But now I have been using a virtual reality for almost 3 years, and I recharge myself occasionally to make sure I stay on top of my game. But the being able to go into the scenes that they develop or following instructions on how to breathe or focuses on different parts of my body gives me a different perspective on that pain.
And as we could see in that video of me looking around with the glasses, looking up, looking down, because it's 360, so you can really see all around you, up and down, left and right. In fact, if you were scared of heights, you might be afraid of falling all the way down the cavern, right? But The bottom line is, you know, that it is entertainment, but it's also a distraction.
That's correct. And one of the things that I realized is, you know, I have a lot of back pain and neck pain. I found myself using the virtual reality headset and turning my body more than I would normally to be able to see the 360. So, you know, it's therapeutic in that way. It actually caused me to stretch.
You know, when you look at dolphins under the water or you look at an ocean, it's calming by its very nature. But the idea that you can be in a hospital bed or you could be coming in for care at Cedars-Sinai, where they've been doing all this research on virtual reality goggles, and be transported is really fascinating because, as the researchers explain it, your brain can only be at one place at one time. But once you go to a scene like dolphins under the water, you're hijacking the scene, and you're taking over the senses and the sensibilities, and suddenly that is your reality.
That's correct. The way I interpret it is the mind can only be at one place at one time. Like Dr. Laron said, when you're visually in some place and you've got the sound in your ears, seeing is believing, and you are transported, whether it's the underwater or beach scene or a meadow scene or whatever, you actually feel like you're there. And even in LA, it with the noise of the city, you find yourself someplace else.
You know, it's and interesting. I was going to say, it's interesting because what doctors might say, if you're using it, is do it three times a day and as needed. But that sounds like they're giving you a pill. Take it three times a day and as needed. Fact of the matter is, the way the doctors explain it, you kind of have opioids in your spine. You are your own pharmacy. And so when you trigger some of the stimuluses, you actually, your body goes to work for you.
Yes, definitely. You know, I'm a strong believer in the mind-body connection, and that the mind and the body need to work together, and you need to be aware and give it permission. And one of the things that happens with the VR goggles is it actually breaks down the inhibitions. When Dr. Spiegel is putting the headset on you and you're going to see the earth from another perspective, you know, you forget about the pain. You forget about, you know, somebody rattling a bedpan next to you, or you forget about an injection. And it really is immersive to the point where it becomes a very effective tool to help you deal with acute pain, PTSD, chronic pain. I recently even used it for an exam for bladder cancer and didn't feel a thing. And the options for this device for education and for helping people seem to be limitless.
And you know what? It's amazing. Technology just continues to boggle our minds. And with goggles that help boggle our mind, we can find new applications. Tom Norris, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Best of luck on your health journey. And we'll be right back with more on Fox 11 News In Depth right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, if you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to your podcast, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. As we said at the top of this program, this is the first time I've been in the studio to do this show in 15 months. So I'm really glad to be back with the studio crew, the control room crew. I love you all. Can't tell you how much I'm glad to see you. And that's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks for joining us. And as we go, we leave you with the calming images from the virtual reality device that we showed you. Enjoy swimming. Dolphins. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a good week. We'll see you next time.